thinking about it. I meant to do it Sunday and forgot, so we did this quick business meeting. We did get a request of letter for Maris. Don't let me forget to give you the card, Brother Art. Again, we want to continue looking at places we get stuck. The last 2 weeks, we've been looking at sin. We've seen what constitutes sin as far as the Bible is concerned. We saw last week the devastation that sin causes, and sin always, whether we are aware of it or not, sin always causes damage. Sin always results in some loss, and so therefore it's a very serious matter. We want to start now looking at some things that we must do to avoid getting stuck in sin, and we'll spend a few weeks doing that. But there has to be a hatred for sin, and I believe overall our hatred for sin has lessened through the years. I believe there's a lot of reasons for that that we're not going to go into, but people overall, and I mean God's people, do not hate sin like they ought to, and none of us do hate it like we ought to, but there has been a lessening of the hatred of sin. There has been a lessening of the fear of sin, and these two things result in more and more people getting stuck in sin. As we looked at the devastation that sin causes last week, that ought to cause us to really fear sin. It ought to cause us to really fear sinning at any time, at any place. Romans 12 in verse 9 says that we're to abhor that which is evil. That is, we're to detest it. It is something that ought to disgust us. It's something that ought to cause horror. We are to abhor that which is evil. We are to cleave, that is, cement ourselves to that which is good. And this is absolutely necessary if we're going to avoid getting stuck in sin, if we're going to avoid sinning, if we're going to deal with sin properly in our life, we have to abhor that which is evil. On dealing with sin, which again is ways to avoid getting stuck in sin, we need to always be aware of the danger of sinning. We need to always be aware of the danger of becoming defiled by sin. And there is not any place that you and I can go on this earth where we are not in danger of sinning, where we are not in danger of becoming defiled by sin. You know, people have said through the years, well, I always thought church was a safe haven. Well, you were wrong in thinking that. It is true that church should certainly be safer than the world. But what you need to realize is there is no place in this world that you can go where you can escape the danger of sin, where you can escape the defilement of sin. And the reason that is so is because wherever you go, you go. You're there. And therefore, we're always in danger of sin. This is very well illustrated in the book of Numbers. If we turn there, Numbers chapter 19, we have the law concerning uncleanness. This is ceremonial law. A lot of times people wonder why there were some of the laws that there were. And the ceremonial law, of course, was for the Jewish people. And it pictured Christ, no doubt. But it also showed, ceremonial law showed the danger of sin, showed the danger of defilement. And the Lord made these laws, or put these laws into effect, to teach the children of Israel. And therefore, you and I can look at the ceremonial laws, though we're not under ceremonial law today. We can look at the ceremonial laws, and there's much we can learn from them. And here in Numbers chapter 19, we have the law concerning uncleanness, that is, as far as it relates to touching a dead body. Now, that doesn't apply today. If you touch a dead body, you're not going to be unclean. But there are lessons here that we learn. And what we learn here is that the Israelite was always in danger. He was always in danger of being defiled by that which was unclean. And it is no less so for you and I today. The lesson is that the child of God is always in danger of becoming unclean, and therefore must always be on guard. You can never, ever let your guard down. People say, well, I can let my guard down at home. You better not. I can let my guard down at church. You better not let your guard down anywhere, because you're always in danger of sinning. You're always in danger of defilement. The devil is always at work. So in all places and in all circumstances, we have to be aware that I can sin, and I can become defiled by my sin or someone else's sin, or by the temptation to sin. The danger is always there. Now notice in Numbers 19 and verse 11. He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. So from this we learn that we become defiled by coming into contact with that which is unclean. Is there anywhere we can go where there is not the possibility that we come into contact with that which is unclean? Everywhere we go, that possibility exists, that we can come into contact with that which is unclean. So we have to always be aware of the danger of sin. And there are very few people today who are very much aware at all. Most are oblivious to the dangers of sin that is all around them. So we see the Israelite could become defiled by coming into contact with that which is unclean. Notice in verse 14. This is the law: when a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. So we learn from this that we can become defiled by simply being in companionship with someone else. Say you're visiting an individual, a friend, you're at his tent here in the Old Testament, and suddenly he dies of a heart attack. You're unclean. That's what verse 14 says. You're in the tent. You didn't touch him, but you're in companionship, and you're unclean. Wasn't anything you could do about it. Wasn't anything you could do. There wasn't anything that you could do to prevent it from happening. It was completely out of your control. The man died. But because you were there, you were unclean. for 7 days. Again, what this teaches, it shows the seriousness, the danger of uncleanness. Just being with somebody, we can become unclean. Something that is completely out of our control. Something that we had absolutely nothing to do with. And yet, we can become unclean. This is, you can't hardly drive your car without seeing something that causes uncleanness in your mind. And I know you can't go through the TV channels without seeing something. Maybe you didn't mean to see it, and maybe you didn't dwell on it, maybe you skipped through it very quickly, but you did see it. And whether you realize it or not, that brought some uncleanness into your life. That brought some uncleanness into your mind. You're driving down the street, you see a billboard of nudity. You didn't put the billboard there. You didn't know the billboard was there. You did not purposely look, but there it was. Nothing you could do about it. But there is a degree of uncleanness there. And we need to realize that. And that needs to be confessed. You say, well, I didn't do it. It was out of my control. But the fact is, you're unclean. And because of uncleanness, we need to be cleansed, which involves confession. Thirdly, notice in verse 15. This is dwelling upon verse 14 concerning the individual dying in the tent. And every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. So again, the individual dies in his tent. Every vessel in that tent that was not covered is now unclean. So we learn from this that we become unclean through a lack of watchfulness. Somebody should have been paying attention to make sure that those vessels were covered, just in case. They had no control of the man dying, but they should have been watching just in case something happened to prevent defilement. And that's true of us. We have to be ever so watchful, just in case. Just in case. This is why Paul said in Ephesians, walk circumspectly. Walk very, very carefully. Watch unto all things. Because we are in danger of defilement. Notice in verse 16, whosoever toucheth one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. Now, there's a lot we can draw from that verse. But here, differing from verse 11, he that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. It seems to me verse 11, the individual intentionally touches a dead body. That individual is unclean. It appears from verse 16 that one comes into contact with a dead body unintentionally. You do not have to intentionally sin to be unclean. All you have to do is sin, and you're unclean. Whether it was intentional or not, there is still a degree of uncleanness. And that's why when people say, well, I didn't mean to, you're still unclean. You're still unclean. Now notice here in verse 16, we see there's one that has been killed with a sword, and no doubt, obviously, his body is in an open field. You're walking along in an open field, and you accidentally come into contact with this body. You're unclean. did not intentionally touch the body. But regardless, you're still unclean. It goes on to say, or a bone of a man. Say you're walking along and you're looking straight ahead and you trip over a bone. You're unclean. Your foot touched that bone, you are unclean. You say, oh, this is all ridiculous. No, it isn't. It teaches us the danger. It teaches us the reality of defilement. Again, it does not have to be intentional. It says if he touches a grave, he's walking along and he walks across a grave. Perhaps after he walks across the grave, he realizes that what he's done. What if you walk across a grave and never realize it? You and I can become unclean. We can sin without realizing it. And that is why we're to be specific in confessing our sin, but then at the same time, we have to be general. And because there are sins we commit every day that we don't even know about. And those sins bring uncleanness as well. So one can become defiled by actually coming into contact with that which is unclean. One can become defiled from just simply being with somebody. One can become defiled through a lack of watchfulness. They were careless. We can become defiled unintentionally. We just come into contact, didn't mean to, but we did, and that makes us unclean. So we learn from this that we're always in danger of defilement. The Jewish man or woman, whether he or she were at home in their tent, or whether they were in the tent of a friend or relative, or whether they were just walking the roads, they were always in danger of defilement. And that is the lesson for you and I today. Wherever we go, we are in danger of defilement. And that's why it cannot be stressed enough to walk circumspectly. Walk very, very carefully. It's like walking through a minefield. We're always in danger. You don't purposely step on a mine, but they're there. And because they're there, there is danger. And wherever we go, there is sin. And because there is sin, there is danger. There is danger of defilement. We can overhear somebody say something and be defiled. And be defiled. Because you cannot hear something without it registering in your brain. So there is a degree of defilement. When you hear filth, there is a degree of defilement. So if we're going to avoid getting stuck, we have to abhor that which is evil. And we have to realize that we are always in danger. Always. James chapter 1, the last verse of James chapter 1, I believe it is, says, "Keep thyself unspotted from the world." That's our responsibility. Now, you can personally run through a mud puddle and you'll be spotted. Or you can just be near the mud puddle and someone else run through it. And you become spotted. The point is, you don't have to commit the sin to be defiled. You just have to be in the area. And you can become defiled. And that's why, again, Jesus, and another lesson entirely, but John chapter 13, when Jesus washed the feet of the apostles, the feet were always defiled. They didn't wear shoes, so their feet were always dirty. They always need cleansing. And that's how it is for you and I. We always need cleansing. All the time. All the time. So we have to be aware of the danger of sin. Then notice in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 4. It says, "Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." If we're going to avoid getting stuck, we have to hate sin. We have to be always aware of its danger. And we have to strive against sin to the point where we are willing to resist with our own blood. That is, we are willing to give our own lives rather than sin. We're to strive against sin. To strive is to struggle. We're never to give in to sin. We're to always be struggling with sin. To strive is to fight and to battle. And we're always to be fighting against sin. We're always to be at battle with sin. If we ever become lax, we're on our way to getting stuck in a specific sin. We can't become lax. We must always be striving against sin. The implication of striving is that we exert ourselves. It requires energy. We are to exert ourselves against sin. We're to do all that we can to avoid sin. Now, Jesus taught this in the Sermon on the Mount. He taught the very solemn duty of suppressing and striving earnestly against sin. Notice in Matthew chapter 5, and again, this is a passage that many do not understand, but again, the Lord is teaching us a lesson here. He's showing us the seriousness of sin. He's showing us the seriousness of allowing sin in our bodies. In Matthew 5, verse 29, in verse 30. In verse 28, he talks about the individual who looks on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Talking about seeing with the eye. Verse 29. "And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell." So, verse 29 talks about plucking out our eye. Verse 30 talks about cutting off our hand. Rather than allowing sin to dwell within our bodies, what this teaches us is this: we are to go to great lengths to restrain and govern the desires of the flesh. Now, I don't believe that the Lord is teaching us to literally pluck out our eye or to literally cut off our hand, though if you did, you'd still be better off than sinning. But he's teaching us the lesson, the seriousness of sin. So the teaching of Jesus is that we're to go to great lengths to deny ourselves the occasion to sin, even if it is painful to us, and even if it costs us much, even if it involves personal loss, we're to be willing to lose whatever to avoid sin. Now, there aren't many of us willing to do that, to go to these lengths. And that is because we don't have the hatred that we need, and we do not have the fear that we need. Now, let's consider what Jesus says here. The eye represents that which is cherished. We're to be willing to get rid of that which is cherished in order to avoid sin. We're to be willing to do that. We're to, the hand refers to that which is useful. It's very useful. It's profitable. It's beneficial. We're to be willing to cast aside that which is of use to us in order to avoid sin. So the illustration that Christ uses of the right eye or the right hand reveals the lengths that we should go. But it also reveals the character, it reveals the danger and the seriousness of dealing with sin in our lives. Now, if you were to pluck out your right eye, or if you were to cut off your right hand, that would be very, very painful. But the Lord says it is better to do that than to hold on to that which is offensive. Yes, it would cause great pain to pluck out our right eye or to cut off our right hand, but not as much pain as we bring into our lives by allowing sin to reign there. This is what Jesus is teaching us. To pluck out our eye or to cut off our hand would involve a great loss. It would involve a great loss. But you lose more by allowing that, by holding unto and refusing to cast aside that which is offensive. You lose even more. Now, I know as I say this that probably most of the people here don't believe a word of it. But it's true. It's true. This is how serious it is to sin. We need to realize this. The teaching, if we pluck out our eye or cut off our hand, that would be very destructive. But not as destructive as allowing a channel for sin to be in our life. It would be foolish. It would be foolish for an individual to pluck out their eye. It would be foolish for an individual to cut off their hand. But as foolish as that might be, it's not as foolish as allowing sin in our lives. There's nothing more foolish than to allow sin in our lives. You know what we do today? People sin and people congratulate them. It's sickening, but they do. They actually congratulate them. They celebrate with them. Would you celebrate if they plucked out their right eye? Would you congratulate them? No, you'd say, you fool. What is wrong with you? What are you thinking? Don't you see? Allowing sin in your life is worse than plucking out your eye and cutting off your hand. To pluck out our eye or to cut off our hand would cause a great inconvenience for you and I. It would bring great inconvenience into our lives, but not as much as sin brings into our life, the inconvenience that sin brings. So he shows us again the seriousness of dealing with sin. But people today have been duped by the devil. They have been duped by society into believing, well, everyone does it. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Not one iota. Sin is destructive. Sin is dangerous. And it doesn't matter what century it is. Sin is just as dangerous. It doesn't matter how much it is approved and accepted by society and approved and accepted by churches. It still doesn't matter. It's still defiling. All sin is of a defiling nature. So we are to hate sin. We are to be always aware of the presence of sin. Always aware of the danger of defilement. And we are to go to great lengths in ridding ourselves of that which is offensive, that which is sin. And again, as we said a couple weeks ago, it is not left to us to determine what is sin. God has already determined that. So for you and I to say, well, I don't feel it's wrong. Oh, it doesn't matter if you feel that way or not. If God says it's wrong, it's wrong. Whether you feel it's wrong, it doesn't matter. That's not the issue. If God says it's wrong, it's wrong. And it's defiling. So if we're going to avoid getting stuck, we have to strive to avoid sin. Sin is everywhere. But you and I have to strive to avoid it. And I don't see a whole lot of people striving to avoid sin. I could give a lot of examples to prove my point. We go to places that puts us in the very atmosphere of sin. We say, well, I'm not participating. You don't have to. Don't you see, just being in the area, you are defiled. You bring some defilement into your life. And we don't consider that. There is not a conscious effort. There is a conscious effort to avoid some sins, but there is not a conscious effort to avoid the defilement that is all around us. We have to avoid sin. Because if we do not avoid sin, if we play with sin, we're going to get burned. We're going to become defiled. Notice in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 23 through verse 28. Proverbs 6, verse 23 through 28. For the commandment, that is the word of God, is a lamp, and the law, the word of God, is light. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life. To keep thee from something. And he gives a particular example, but the example could be anything. The Word of God is there to keep us from something. What was it when, after Eve entered into a conversation with Satan, what was it that bothered Eve? She was kept from something. She was kept from something. And the devil played on that. And people today cannot stand the thought of a boundary, of a wall that keeps them from something. But that is the very design of the Word of God, to keep us from things, sinful things. Now notice the example he gives. To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. And here's what I want to notice. And again, this applies to anything. I realize he gives one particular example, but it applies to anything. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burnt? First of all, I want to say, if you take fire in your bosom, you're a fool. And if you expect that you can take fire in your bosom and your clothes not be burned and you not be burned, you're even a bigger fool. And when we play with sin, when we get near sin, it's like taking fire in our bosom
and you're going to get burned. Verse 28, can one go upon hot coals? Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to walk on hot coals? That's pretty foolish. And it is foolish to hang around sin. But you, if you were to walk upon hot coals, would you be surprised after you walked across them, would you be surprised if your feet burned? Well, I don't think so. You wouldn't be surprised. You would expect it. Why is it today we think that we can play with sin, we can be around sin, we can live in the area of sin, but it doesn't affect us? How foolish. The devil has you duped if you believe that. And that's why we have to avoid even being in the area of sin. A lot of places people, God's people, have no business eating at because of the area, because of what it puts you in, the atmosphere. And I know people don't like that, because they've been doing it all their lives and they've been defiling themselves all their lives. Don't you see? Just being in the area, there is a degree of defilement. And you can protest all you want to, I don't participate. But don't you see? You're close enough. You're close enough. You just got to be close. And you're in danger. We're not to move in the direction of the temptation to sin. And we're not to move in the direction of sin. We're to move away from sin. We are to avoid sin. Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. That is, do not move in their direction. Well, I'm not going to fully participate, and they know I don't approve. But you moved in that direction. And by simply moving in that direction, you have defiled yourself. And you have also weakened your testimony amongst those who have enticed thee, because you moved in their direction. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 14 and 15. Enter not into the path of the wicked. Does not say, do not do as the wicked. That's not what it says. Now that's true, of course. But this is much more. Enter not into the path of the wicked. Do not move in their direction. Do not go down their road. And go not in the way of evil men. Now, you are to avoid it. You're to avoid it. At what cost are we to avoid it? Matthew 5 again, verse 29 and 30. We're to avoid it, being willing to get rid of that which is most cherished to us and that which is most useful to us, if that's what it takes to avoid it. We're to be willing to strive with blood to avoid the direction of sin. And then he goes on, pass not by it. Pass not by it. Now let's say you're walking along, and there it is. The path of the wicked. There it is, the way of evil men. What are you to do? You're to turn from it. And you're to pass away. You're not to hang around it. You're not to observe it. You're to pass by it. You're to avoid it. You're to go the other direction. That's what the Bible teaches. This is part of striving against sin. We are to avoid it. Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. And verse 14. halfway through that verse, it says, make not provision for the flesh. Make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. We're to avoid sin. We're to avoid it at all cost. Now the Bible gives us some examples of men who went in the direction of sin. And ruined their lives, brought much destruction in their lives. We read in Genesis 13, of course, of Lot. We'll not go there to save time. But it says that Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom. He moved in that direction. By the time you get to Genesis 19, he's right in the middle of Sodom. You can never get in the middle of Sodom if you don't move in the direction of Sodom. And there are sins that you cannot fall into if you do not move in that direction. Lot moved in that direction. Was it his intent to move into Sodom? I don't think so. But he did. As a result of moving in that direction. I think of David. Bathsheba. David was at home during the time when kings went forth to battle. That means David should have been in the battle. He was neglecting duty. That was his first mistake. He then innocently went out on his balcony, and there's Bathsheba. At that very moment, David should have turned around and went back in the house, but he didn't. She was very beautiful to look upon. What does that mean? That means David was looking. And then, of course, that just went a step further and a step further and a step further. He moved in the direction of temptation. And David may have thought, well, I'll just look for a little while. What's it going to hurt? He moved in the direction of temptation. I think of Solomon, 2 Kings or 1 Kings chapter 11. First of all, he married women that God said that God's people were not to marry. That was his first mistake. He moved in that direction. And then there he's worshiping their gods. Was it his intent to worship their gods? No. Did Solomon set out to worship the gods of the Moabites? No. Did Solomon worship the god of the Moabites? Yes. And it all started when he moved in the direction of sin. I hear people say all the time, well, I can go there because I'm strong enough. You're a fool. Because no one is strong enough. You're playing with sin. You're playing with fire. It's like, why don't you just go home, take a hot coal, and put it up against your chest? Well, that'd be stupid. That's my point. That's my point. You move in the direction of sin. Jehoshaphat, we read in 2 Chronicles 18 and verse 1, he joined affinity with Ahab. He moved in that direction. Next thing we know, he married his daughter. Was it his intent to marry his daughter? No. But he moved in that direction. So we have to avoid sin. We have to be willing to go to great lengths to avoid sin. And when we speak on a subject like this, many people, I know, they're thinking, well, you've lost your mind. No, we have been duped into believing that we can play with sin and not be defiled. That we can even be in the area of sin and not be defiled. We've been deceived. Because all through the Bible we see that's not the case. you move in that direction, you're headed for ruin. You're headed for trouble. Bible teaches also that we are to depart from sin. It uses such words as flee, youthful lusts. When you flee something, it's because you are afraid of it. That's part of our problem tonight. We are not afraid of sin. We're not afraid of the devastation that it can cause. You know why? Because we've been watching all our lives TV. We've seen it on TV thousands of times. And it decreases our hatred for sin. It decreases our fear of sin. We have become so accustomed to evil, so accustomed to wickedness, that we no longer fear it. And if you do not fear it, you'll hang around it. But if you fear it, you will flee from it. People hang around sin because they're not afraid of it. And another reason, again, another reason to hang around sin is because they like it. Because that's where they like to hang around. It intrigues them. When sin intrigues you, you've got a problem. You've got a real sin problem within. In closing, we see this truth of departing from sin is illustrated in the life of Joseph. And we'll close Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. Verse 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. Something he couldn't help. And she said, lie with me. But he refused. And said unto his master's wife, and he gave reasons, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That attitude ought to always be upon our hearts. When we are tempted, when we come into the area of sin, we must say, how can I do this and sin against God? And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her, to lie by her or to be with her. It came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. He was fearful, but he had enough courage to flee. A lot of people today do not have enough courage to flee because all their friends are hanging around sin. You need courage enough to flee from it. You need courage enough to get away from it. Because again, just hanging around it defiles your mind. Defiles your mind. Just hearing it, you become defiled. You can be in the workplace and somebody curse. Not your fault they cursed. Not your fault necessarily that you heard them curse. But it registered in your mind, and you became defiled. You became defiled. When you heard it, you became defiled. Your brain became defiled. All the danger. And how we must strive against sin. So when we even hear the filth, we need to stop and pray, Lord, cleanse me. Cleanse my mind. That filth just went into my mind. Cleanse me.
switching through the TV channels, you see something, oh, Lord, cleanse me. We're defiled. Don't buy into the idea that you have to commit the sin to be defiled by it. All you have to do is be around. So this is very serious, that we strive and that we go to great lengths in battling sin. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us in verse 6.